Okay, it's Tanya out, Tanya wide open at G4. We're just before Pesach, so we'll speak for a minute about Pesach. So, in Yedid Nefesh, at the end of the first stanza in Yedid Nefesh, we say Yerav Yerav Lo Yedidoseach Nefesh Sifachol Tuan, that your friendship is sweet to you, is sweet to me, to him, whatever, more than any honeycomb or any taste. So Yerav Lo Yedidoseach, his yedidius, his friendship, his love will be sweet to you, yeah, more than any kind of honey or any kind of delicious taste.
It will be.
It will be, yeah. So, the want to ask a question: the inyan of manishtana. So, inyan manishtana. You have your youngest child stand up on a chair and ask the four questions, and they don't care. But see, the whole thing about a child is a child doesn't care about answers. He doesn't. A young child doesn't care about reasons, bichlal. So you take your 4-year-old child, yeah? You have a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Whoever. You have a 4-year-old? How old's your oldest?
12.
Oh, so she's past that now.
I'm still interested in
there's the
sharing.
Age. There's the
No,
age where every question is followed with why, but why, but why.
But wait, so listen to this. Because that's important, because it's interesting. It's not so straightforward.
Around that age, my older one is 7. Trying to remember when she was going through that phase, but there was that phase that everything you answer and you feel like you give a great answer, and then they just stuck you with, but why? And then you go, oh gosh, now I gotta give another answer, you know.
So when you ask when you say to a 4-year-old, I want you to jump up and down and spin around, yeah, your 4-year-old will do that immediately.
Sure. Right.
They won't ask why.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can run backwards and forwards from this room 3-4 times. They're going backwards forwards. Ask the same question to your 12-year-old, and they'll say why. And it's between like depending on the child between like 8 and 10, when the child's bina starts to develop, and they start to actually like logicize, if that's a word, they make like to make sense of the world. They start to need reasons for stuff. Yeah, earlier than that, they don't need reasons. So if you don't need a reason for something, yeah, then that the other side of the coin is that you don't care about answers to questions, unless it's just something like, you know, how do I open the door? But I was saying, like, actually understanding why, you know, like one of my children asked the other day, why do we get married, or why did Hashem make mechablim? Yeah. Why is the sun so bright?
Yeah.
Yeah, all these kinds of questions.
And what age is that?
What?
Which age child is asking those?
Well, I've got one kid who is 4 who asks crazy questions all the time. He's a very clever little boy. So, but anyway, so the.
That's you're saying more. Those questions are not why questions, though?
Well, those questions, so they are why. But the child doesn't really care why. See, what happens is the child sees something. And a question pops into his mind. But he's not really bothered about the answer. And how do you know that? Because when your child is sitting with you, he's like, why? Sit him with somebody else, he's silent. He's not asking the question because of the question. He's asking the question because of you. He's looking for an excuse to ask you a question. So he'll sit there with you with an endless stream of questions, yeah? You sit the same kid next to his grandfather or next to somebody else, yeah? Won't say a word. Not a word. So what do you learn from that? You learn from that why is the child then asking the question?
Because the child wants the relationship with the parent.
He just wants to be close to you.
Yeah.
He's using that question as an excuse or as a tool to interact with you. That's the whole point of the question for the child, for the young child. Yeah? That's almost the foundation of Yiddishkeit. That's Manishtana. Manishtana is you take the youngest child. See, I always learn that you know, the child stands up and he's asking the questions. You don't even answer all the questions. One question you don't answer bichlal, the other ones you answer like right at the end. Like, it takes a long time, you know, the kid. So we're sitting there thinking, so he's asking the questions because Yiddishkeit is about asking questions and we'll give him the answers, yeah? It's exactly the opposite. Yiddishkeit is about asking questions, but the question's why? What's the point of asking questions in Yiddishkeit?
That's a good question.
That's the whole point of it. It's not about actually getting more knowledge. It's actually about, now we've got an excuse to talk to Rabbeinu Shloim. So now these questions need to bother you, that you really need to. So what we're doing, the avoid of Manishtana, is you're learning what questions are about. You're learning what your relationship with Rabbeinu Shloim needs to look like. That's the point. You stand your 3-year-old child on a chair, and he's Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. And you're sitting there thinking, the whole reason why you, young child, are asking questions is just to come close to me. And that's the whole foundation of Yiddishkeit, that we need to develop this intolerance for not knowing stuff. But not out of a guy with a dick of needing to know. That's what the Rabbeinu Shloim wants from us. So, like, learning the story, you know, learning these crazy stories in the Gemara and stuff like this, yeah? There's crazy stories in the Gemara. You know, for example, I'll give you a nice example. There's the story of Nachamish Gamzu, yeah? In Titus. You remember that story?
The keeper takes the treasure?
Yeah. So, but it's interesting because that's really the second part of the story. That's like the first part of the story. The Gemara is talking about the din of like wobbly, like jiggly, wobbly walls and wobbly houses and stuff like that, yeah, that are going to fall down. And then introduce Nachamish Gamzu. He's lying there in his little shack. It's mumish, ready to collapse, yeah. And his Talmidim come in. You remember this? His Talmidim come in. They see him lying on the bed, yeah. He's in such a state. He doesn't have any arms and legs. Yeah. He's blind. His body is full of like shchin, like in Yad of the Yoma of the Makkas. Shchin, sores, whatever, yeah. And he's in such a state that his bed is in cups. The legs of his bed are in cups of water so the ants can't crawl up and eat him. So he's lying there, mumish, in such a state, yeah? And the Talmidim come in and say, Rebbe, we want to, you know, the house is going to fall down, so we want to take you out, and then we'll take out the Kalim. He says, no, if you take me out first, then the house will fall down. So take out all the Kalim and then take me out. Yeah, and in my schools, the house will stand, and then... So he said, Rebbe, what? Then I think it was in this order, they said, we can't, why are we seeing you like this? What a matzav you're in. So he says, Baruch Hashem, you're seeing me like this. They said, Oy vey, we don't want to see all this. He says, Baruch Hashem, you're seeing me like this. Why? So he tells them the story, if I remember correctly. He's coming back from his father-in-law's, yeah, on a band of donkeys. He had a whole, like, you know, a whole caravan of donkeys. And he had... He was riding on one donkey and he had donkeys laden with all kinds of different goods and stuff. A guy jumps out in front of him, a poor starving man, and says, Rebbe, you know, he says, Parseli, give me something to eat. So Nachamish Gamzu says, let me get down from my horse, one for my donkey, and I'll get you what to eat. And in the interim, yeah, from him getting down from his donkey and giving the food to the guy to eat, the guy died. So you got this guy lying dead on the floor. Nachamish Gamzu jumps on him, puts his, think he puts his hands on his hands, his feet on his feet, and he says, "Rabbeinu Shlomo, just like I didn't have, just like my eyes didn't have Rachmanis on his eyes, yeah, they should be blinded." Yeah, I think also he was deaf. He said, "Just like my ears didn't hear what he said, they should be deafened." I think it was that. And then he said, "Just like my arms and legs, whatever, didn't run to get him, whatever, they should be cut off." And he said he was still like, he needed to say more. So he said, "And then whatever's left of me should be Malei Shechin." And at that point, his dust was kareh, it was cooled down. So that was the story he told to the Talmidim. So they're seeing him there with no arms and legs, no eyes. I think he was deaf as well, full of shechin, and that was the story that the Gemara introduces Nachamish Gamzu with. After they've introduced that, now they explain why it's called Nachamish Gamzu. Because you always used to say Gums in the Toiva. Why? The story is, the famous story is that he went to, he was chosen by the delegate to bring a treasure to the Kesar as a tribute, whatever it was. And on the way, he stayed in an inn. And like while he was asleep or whatever it was, the Ashurim who owned the hotel came in and they substituted all the gold for just dirt. Yeah. He had no idea, so he just kept going. He got to the Kesar, they open up the treasure chests, and then the Kesar, the Caesar sees the dirt, he thinks it's a big chutzpah, they're making fun of him, so he decreed a gezeira of Misa on all of Am Yisrael, the whole of Am Yisrael, and Nachamish Gamzu said, Gamzu the Toifa.
Right.
So Gamzu the Toifa, and then the rest of the story, you know, right?
Eliyahu HaNavi is credited with letting him know that maybe it's the same dirt that
Avraham Avinu threw. Yeah. So then there's the whole story, and they threw it, and it became arrows, and he won the etc. And it all turned out to be very good. And then the guys in the hotel got killed, etc.
Right.
It's a nice story. The ending was nice. But so you see from here, he's called Nachamish Gamzu because he got to the Kesar saw the dirt. Nachamish Gamzu is like, I don't know what's going on there, and the Kesar decreed Misa and all of Am Yisrael, and he said Gamzu HaToiva. But look at the first story. Shouldn't he have said Gamzu HaToiva
when the guy died?
Yeah, he did the exact opposite. He did put for care mamash. He was oyvei. He didn't say Gamzu HaToiva. He said, just like my eyes didn't have Rachmanis in your eyes, and my hands didn't have Rachmanis in your hands, my legs didn't have Rachmanis in your legs.
Wow.
That's the first part of that Gemara, that story. So he said, you say Gamzu HaToiva to everything. Now, I read that Gemara, and I was thinking about that deeply. Like, what's pshat? You put these two opposite stories. And I'm realizing, look at what Chazal are teaching you. There's not a, there's not a low plug of Gamzu HaToiva. Gamzu HaToiva, Gamzu HaToiva is not a blanket reaction to everything. Because when you do something that's not Poseida, you shouldn't say Gamzu HaToiva. Chaz v'shalom, you should say Gamzu HaToiva. So if you do something...
Between the two stories is in the first story, he felt that what he did wasn't right. In the second story, he knew he did...
Well, let's analyze the stories. Yeah. So it was... I'll bring up to speed very quickly. You know the Gemara in Titus with Nachamish Gamzu? So about the story with the dirt and the gold.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that story, yeah. And he said Gamzu HaToiva. Yeah, even when the Kesar decreed Misa on all of Am Yisrael, yeah, he said Gamzu HaToiva. So that's where he got his name, Nachamish Gamzu, from. But the story before that, do you remember the story? It was on a donkey and a
candle and the rooster.
No, that's Rabbi Akiva. A guy jumps out. He's on a donkey coming back for his father-in-law. A guy jumps out and says, "Give me something to eat." It's a starving guy. So he says, "Okay, just let me get down for my donkey and I'll get you food." And in the meantime, the guy died. In that few seconds that it took him to get off the donkey, to go to the donkey behind him to get the food to give to the starving man. The starving man died. Yeah, and Achmish Gamzu jumped on him and said, just like my eyes didn't have Rahmanas on your eyes, they should be cut out, cut my legs off.
And,
what?
It's in
Tyrus. It might be someone else as well, but I remember it in Tyrus. Basically, his reaction was the opposite of Gamzu the Tova. He didn't say Gamzu the Tova. He said, oy vey, look what I've done. But when you look at what Chazal teach you, if you see, the question is, did that really happen? Did that story, did both those stories really happen? So you have to say, as a Haredi Jew, you have to say yes, otherwise you'll get excommunicated.
Stuff happened.
I mean, there's one of two options.
Didn't tell the story because it happened. Tell the story because it has
that's the point. There's one of two options. The stomach happened. I don't even know. I don't need to see that. I'll tell you, this is the issue with that, is whether it happened or not happened, that's when you're synced into reality and you realize what this world actually is, if it actually happened physically or not, becomes such a irrelevant part of the equation. When you're connected to Panemius, it's actually interesting. In the beginning of Tanya, he brings you the, when he talks about the Tzaddik and the Beinoni and the Rasha, first he gives you the Peish and the Gemara, and then immediately gives you the Peish and the Zoya. So from the Gemara, Peish and Gemara, Tzaddik v'toyev lo, Tzaddik gamo, Tzaddik ra lo, Tzaddik she'eino gamo. Yeah? It means a Tzaddik who has toiv means he's a Tzaddik gamo, is completely righteous. It's just talking about his acts. So in the Gemara it comes out that the Tzaddik is a guy who's 51% good acts, and 49% Averas, 51% Mitzvahs, 49% Averas, and a Tzaddik Gamo would be 100% Mitzvahs, 0% Averas. Yeah? The Beinoni is 50-50, and the other side. The Ryan Mehemna says, in the Zoya, he says, Tzaddik V'Ra'aloi, Shaharasha by Kafu Flatoiv. That's what he says. That the Ra in him is Kafuf, is dominated, subjugated. There's been a word. What? Kafuf. Yeah, thank you. Is Kafuf to the Toiv. You hear the two differences of what the Balatanya just showed you? He just showed you in those few words the difference between Chetzonius and Panemius. Between Pshat and Panemius. Between Oilam HaMaisa, yeah, and the Oilam HaGosha, the Oilam HaPanimi. Who you are, what you do. And they're not the same thing. Amazing, yeah? The Gemara is dealing on a level of Pshat. Don't get me wrong, the Gemara is a big document with a lot of... full of Panemius as well. But the Pashat way of understanding, interacting with the Gemara, is it explains to you what's happening, what's going on. The Pashat understanding of Zoya is it's not about what's happening, it's about who you are, what's going on inside. That's called Chitzonius and Panemius, what's going on outside, what's going on inside. Panemius and Torah is all about inside. We don't really call it Chitzonius at all. We call it Nigla and Nista. Yeah? I've seen it a couple of times called Chitzonius, but we don't really call it that. You can't really use the word Chitzonius at all. But there's the Pshat. Don't call it Chitzonius. You call it Nigla and Nista. So you've got what's going on outside, and then you've got what's going on inside. The outside is, in a sense, so much less real than what's going on the inside. Because depending on what's going on the inside, that's going to make you see the outside very differently. But the avoider is to try and see the outside exactly as it is. Yeah, like we go to a din mishpat and we have to know what happened, who did what, who's culpable, who's potter, v'chule, yeah? So when it comes to a story in the Gemara, to say it happened, that's fine, whatever you want, but don't ever think that the problem with saying it happened, not that it didn't happen, the problem with saying that it happened is it, you could use that as a heter to not beg the Rabbeinu Shloim to tell you what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Now you lost. So if it did happen, yeah, fine. But now, if you're going to say, well, that's just, yeah, that's what happened. I've heard many people say that, yeah? That's not what it's for. So I read this story. So, you know, this is a cute story. And that's one of the reasons why we go over in the yeshivas. We skip through the Agadata so quickly. Because, we're not going to exert the kind of energy onto talking about this story of Nachum Ish Gamzu that we would when learning, you know, Issa Veheta or whatever, you know, Shtei Oichsim with the, however you, whatever kind of pilpul you want to understand in Nigla. But if we do put a little bit of energy into that story and we ask that question, well, what's going on there? Think about what you just learned. You've got Nachum Ish Gamzu, who's the man who said Gamzu L'Toyv, that's his name, yeah? But the very first introduction of him in the Gemara, he sees someone die, and he's like, oy vey, oy vey, cut off my arms, Shem, poke out my eyes, cut off my arms and legs. And he still, it says he still wasn't being comfortable until he said to the Moshe, and whatever's left of me, fill it with shchin, with sores and boils, whatever it is, yeah? That's not Gamzu L'Toyv. The guy should have dropped dead. And Nachum Ish Gamzu should have looked to him and said, Gamzu L'Toyv. I'll bury you, I'll work it out. But not the reaction he had, it was the exact opposite. Yeah. Whereas now, but now turn this is crazy. You have one guy who was starving, who was going to die anyway, and Nachum Ish Gamzu delayed himself by, I mean, how long does it take to get off your donkey to get to the other donkey, yeah?
Also, the other question is, what else could he have done?
Right. So L'Choira, he could have gone a little quicker. This is exactly the point. This is what you need to ask.
To get off the donkey,
you should become intolerant of this. Chazal, this doesn't make any sense. From his donkey, he's got these two donkeys, but he's got three donkeys behind him full of madanim and nice food, yeah?
Is that what the Gemara says, or is that just...
No, the Gemara says
that. He had food on the donkey's
back. The food on the donkey's behind him.
Right.
So he got off the donkey, and he had to get off the donkey, go to one of the donkeys behind him, fumble around in the sack, pull out something to eat, give it to the guy. Now, I'll tell you, I can do a mikveh. A regular mikveh that I take in the morning costs me from when I put my finger on the buzzer to when I come back out that door.
2 minutes.
No. Maybe like 13 minutes. Yeah, 12 minutes. Yeah. But yeah, I know...
That's like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you take... Like, you know, it's all very, very early in the morning. A little shower afterwards, and like, you know, and then I have a few dunks or whatever it is, yeah? So let's say... you know how I know how long it takes? Is because my car's immobilizer lasts for 10 minutes. Meaning that if I leave my car idle, if I leave it off for 10 minutes, I have to redo the number. That's exactly 10 minutes. So I know when I get back to my car, I have to do my immobilizer unless I hustle. If I hustle, yeah, I can. That's when I know that I really hustle, is I can get back to my car and I don't have to do the immobilizer again. Meaning there's madrigas to everything you do. Yeah, you can do everything quicker. Yeah, you can do everything bezrizus. So L'Choira, we're talking about what, a 45 second avoider that he could have potentially done in maybe 30 seconds. If he really hustled, if he knew the guy was going to die, maybe he would have just jumped off, such as that, give the guy the food, probably would have died anyway, yeah? But that's the craziness of the story. But let's say he could have cut the time down by 50%, 60%, 70%, yeah? Okay, that to the side. Now he goes to the Kesar, yeah? And the whole story of the Kesar, this is very important to analyze the story, because he went to sleep in the room in the hotel, yeah? And the Rishoyim came into his room. He was asleep. They opened up the thing. They took out the treasure. They put in the dirt. They closed up. He gets to the Kesar. He opens up the...
He thinks it's treasure. He thinks he's doing... Right.
He thought it was what the Chachamim gave him for when he came. And it's like a bunch of dirt. He's like, that's interesting. And the Kesar says... What?
Yeah. He's like, oh, the Chum sent him dirt, so it must be good dirt.
Yeah, whatever it is. I don't know what's pshat, but I didn't do anything. I'm just the shliach from the Chachamim to the Kesar, and now the Kesar decrees Misa on all of Am Yisrael. And he says, Gamza L'Toiva.
It's so out of his hands.
He could do anything.
Right, there's a side to this that I'm thinking of, the same way that he's thinking is like, when it's something that's like so beyond your control, right? Like Donald Trump decrees something in the world. Like, it's almost easier to say it to me. It's almost easier to say Gamza L'Toiva there. Because like see, that's obviously Hashem's right. hand in this. I have no. What am I gonna do? Go to Donald? I have no control over that, right?
You can hustle a little faster.
There's. I always say it with actually with my wife. We have like two different types of emunah. We have, you know, she. When I'm sitting in traffic, I go nuts. I just can't stand traffic. I'm like, why don't people figure out a better way? There's got to be a better way. This is. It's all systems. Yeah. Why am I sitting here? I'm sitting here. Drives me nuts. I can't stand it. And Mama says, Hashem decided that we should be in traffic right now. What's bothering you? And she's just sitting there cool as a cucumber. I'm like, I don't understand you. That's her. Like, she has that emunah. Like, oh, it's Hashem decided this little things. These okay. little things like that. She could, oh, my finger cracked a nail. I broke my finger. Like, comes with toe. She's like, I'm always like bothered by those little things. Yeah. When it comes to the big things, she's terrified. Terrified. Iran is gonna blow us up. Oh my God, bugging out. Like Hashem's in control of that. I'm cool as a cucumber. Bombs flying over me. That's Hashem's department. So, what is it? Pluck this but it's in. Like two different worlds.
Pluck this in though to this story. This is an important idea. Yeah. Is because in the first, listen to what the lesson Chazal are teaching you is moiridic. As long as you don't go, that's a nice story. Yeah, then the whole thing's lost. But when you listen to the story in detail, you realize Chazal are teaching you the koyach on either side. On the story of the starving man, yeah, Chazal was saying to you, "Don't say gums of the toiver. You could have done something slightly
died.
More."
Well, the guy died. Also, yeah, well, there was a decree.
Wait. It's a bad thing. It's a bad. The decree itself is a bad thing. Yeah. The guy does a bad thing. But Nachamish Gamzu said in his mind. I mean, this just pshat when you think about it. Is I could have hustled. I could have done a teeny bit more. Look, he would have died anyway. But Nachamish Gamzu said, I could have done a teeny bit more, and his reaction was, "This is not Gamzu the Toiva. Chaz v'shalom, I'm going to say that." Chaz v'shalom, I say this is Gamza L'Toiva. The exact opposite reaction. Cut off my arms, my legs, blind my eyes, fill me with shechin. I can't believe what's happened because of me.
He can't say that, but the ma'isa was. The ma'isa, from God's point of view, it was Gamza L'Toiva.
His reaction.
Has a responsibility that he should see himself. I have a responsibility to do. I should know the responsibility.
That's what Chazal was teaching you. From the other side, though.
He must have realized that he could have done more.
Right? But it does that again. Whether what could have just looking at the details of the story, yeah. Chazal give you two opposite stories with two opposite reactions, and you learn out how you need to be in this world. Is number one, don't dive into Hashem to cut off your arms and legs and poke out your eyes when you do something that wasn't perfect, but take responsibility. If you could have done more. And even just a teeny weeny little bit more and things didn't go right because, and you, not because of you, things didn't go right and you could have done a teeny bit more. Now, if you did a bit more, would have things gone right? Probably not. I mean, that guy dies. Not like if I gave him the food 20 seconds earlier, his whole system would have just, you know, worked out again.
He could have said, I tried my best.
Oh, Chaz v'shalom. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point. Exactly the point. Exactly the point. So he didn't say, I tried my best. So Chazal are just giving you this potent story to learn that when it's in your control, the teeniest little thing in your control is you have to take responsibility for that. Even if what was in your control, probably 99% wouldn't have made any difference. But it could have made it. It could have. The other side of the story is Nachamish Gamzu. The Chachamim said to him, take this chest to the Kesar. And so, he did exactly that. He didn't do anything wrong.
That look at the ramifications. His best.
He did that. He just did what he was told to do. 100%. Nothing. There was nothing what he could have done more. And what happened? The worst thing in the world. The first thing was it was hardly anything. It was an old man who was about to die anyway, died. Okay, you know, that's not a tragedy, yeah? That's whatever. Now, all of Am Yisrael get a gezeira of Misa on them. And he says, Gamza L'tova. This is the exact point. You see, when you see yourself, when you're in a situation that is absolutely out of your control, and you have done what you could have done, but if you could have done a little bit more, then you have to take responsibility. But if this is just the situation, and that's how it is, like, you know, as a Baal Tshuva, yeah, when you come back to Yiddishkeit, yeah, and you think about all the schmutz you were involved in, and, you know, still me, you know, 25 years on, and I have images pop into my head in the middle of davening of stupid things I've seen and done when I was a kid. Yeah, like crazy, like things that should have been forgotten about many years ago. Yeah, I didn't ask for that. I didn't ask to be born into the society that I was born into. And I'll tell you, just we're speaking about Bob Dylan, to bring it back to Bob Dylan. When I grew up, you're Baal Tshuva?
Every day.
There was one rule that I lived by when I was growing up. There was only one rule. Don't get caught. Bob Dylan said that with the Traveling Wilburys, I think. In somewhere everything's legal as long as you don't get caught. And the walls came down.
Right.
Yeah, that was the only rule that I had as a kid. Yeah, just don't get caught. That was literally the only rule. There was no concept of morality whatsoever. Nothing.
Right.
And I did things that I wish I hadn't have done. But you're by the time you're here now, and it's like, what can you do? Your whole past. Now you get pictures spat up into your mind from your subconscious. Yeah? That's Gamza L'tova. That's the avoider of Gamza L'tova.
Well,
you have to get them out of there.
They're both stories of where Hashkacha was at. If this guy that was starving and dying had, you know, been 5 feet further away, he would have died already before he even got to him.
Yeah.
And if Nachamish Gamzu hadn't stayed at that hotel, he stayed in a different hotel. If they did not, like, that was also like Dafka Hashem planned for both of those things to happen exactly how they
had. Everything with Avala is Hashkacha. Avala.
Right? So they're both stories of Hashkacha. Like what he took from that story.
The point is, Chazal is trying to show you, look at where you have to take responsibility for.
Right.
Look at that teeny little amount extra you could have done that probably wouldn't have made any difference. And Chazal are telling you, if you're a very holy man like Nachamish Gamzu, you will not forgive yourself for that. You will try and do everything you can to make up for that. On the other side, if you're a holy man like Nachamish Gamzu, and something absolutely terrible, terrible takes place through you, but you know that it was nothing to do with you. Why are you taking it personally? Imagine me if I'd done that. I'd be. I mean, I've heard the story, so maybe I'd get over it now. But if I was the one who brought the treasure to the Kesar, and then he's like opens it up and says, "You're making fun of me? I'm going to kill all the Yidden."
Oh.
I'd be in my room like tearing my hair out. Tati, what did I do? Huh? What did I do? Nachamish Gamzu just said Gamzu L'tova. You hear the koyach that Chazal is teaching you.
I can't believe
you.
I didn't check this.
He said, take this thing to here and give it to them. And I did that, exactly. I couldn't have done it any better. I couldn't have done it any different. There was nothing. That's it. And the worst thing in the world that could ever happen, which is all of Am Yisrael gets decreed Misa, I say Gamza L'tova. Whereas one old man who was about to drop dead anyway, yeah, and I could have hustled a teeny bit more and done it in 10 seconds quicker, and I'm sure he would have done anyway. For that, I can't get over that. That's an amazing. So the reason why we spoke about this, yeah, is we were talking about the idea of the idea of of stories of how we interact with the Torah, how we should be interacting with the Torah. This is about Manishtana, yeah? So I'll just recap again for people who've probably forgotten because it was already a while ago. What's the inyan of the youngest child asking the four questions? Yeah? Because the youngest child doesn't care about answers. How's your oldest kid?
13.
Yeah, so your youngest kid?
Six.
Six. So that's still probably shaykh, yeah? You'll sit there, a boy or girl?
Girl.
So boys are a little more questioning. But you'll sit there with... That you sit there with a four-year-old, five-year-old, maybe a six-year-old. Probably a six-year-old. And they're just asking you question after question after question, yeah? It can be like that. That same kid sitting next to a different person, silence. In the same situation with the same kind of questions going on, but they're not asking any questions. And if you say to a kid, you know, oh no, yeah, they'll go on to the next question without skipping a beat. You know what I'm saying? They're like, oh, why is the sky blue? Because it is. Oh, okay, so then why is the sun like this? Because that's how Hashem made it. Uh-huh. And then they'll go on to the next question. They don't care. Why? Because they're not asking the question for the information. They're asking the question to get close to you. That the question is a clue to come close to you. That's what it is. So that's what we're learning on Leil Seder. The beginning of Leil Seder is not that all of Yiddishkeit is predicated on questions. That's fine. But it's much more than that. The youngest child is asking that question. Why? Because the youngest child doesn't care about the answer. All the youngest child wants is to get close to you. And that's exactly the foundation of our relationship to the Torah and our relationship with Rabbi Nishloim. The Torah is called a Kli Chemda, Shem Leichem. A beautiful kli. Or maybe I'll mention something else. Oh no, mention's useful. That it's a beautiful kli. And this is the difference between the Umas Oilam, the relationship of the Umas Oilam to the Torah, and the relationship of the Yidden. How do we know this? We were just talking about this before. That the Yidden translate the is it in Makkos or Chagiga? When the Chachamim translated the Torah into Greek. I can't remember.
It was probably Gamaliel that gave the psak, that it was
But there were 70 Chachamim.
They translated it into
it was Ptolemy HaMelech who requested it. Anyway, so there were 70 Chachamim who were sat in separate cubicles, and Hashem made a nace that they all made the same changes. The first change they made was instead of the Torah is written Bereshis Bore Elohim, they changed it because you might think that there's this thing called Bereshis that made Elohim. So they changed it to Elohim Bore Bereshis. In whatever language they did, but that was the translation of the Targum that they made. Elohim Bara Bereshis. Yeah, they all did that. That was the first change. So listen to the difference. What's the difference between the Torah for the Yidden and the Torah for the Goyim? The Torah for the Yidden begins with the base, and the Torah for the Umas Olam begins with an Aleph. What's the difference? Because the Torah is
I mean, there's a whole.
So
a,
what you're asking?
There's so much that's different. I mean, just the idea. I remember there was a, I think the Vilna Gaon. First of all, the whole entire first parak of Bereishis can be summed up in just the first pet.
Oh sure, the first base, and the first yeah.
word, and the first word, and the first letter, and that letter has to be the base.
Tikkun Izoya is about that. The Tikkun Izoya is 70 Purushim on the word Bereishis. And the Or Chaim opens his commentary on the Torah with, I think, 42 drushas on Bereishis, I think. Like it's quite, I mean, go on Safari and see how many drushas are on Bereishis on the Mefarshim.
Right.
Thousands. But what's the difference between the Torah beginning with a base and the Torah beginning with Aleph?
So we could ask questions.
Why? Yeah.
Because why? We could ask that question. We could start with that question.
Oh, you
could
start. Okay, that's fine. That's good.
And it starts.
By the way, also the Gemara, the Gemara also begins with a base. Remember, every duff in the every Masechta begins with base Amud Aleph. Doesn't begin with Amud Aleph. It doesn't. Yeah. It begins with base duff base Amud Aleph. It doesn't begin with duff Aleph Amud Aleph. Yeah, there's no Aleph. Why? It's
the space between us and Hashem that we can move closer to.
So, the Torah is called a kli chemda, a beautiful kli. What's the purpose of a kli? What's held in the Torah? What is the Torah a kli that the Torah is a kli that holds what? The Rabbeinu Shloilem is in the Torah. He's melubish in the Torah. So for us, the Torah is a means to Rabbeinu Shloilem. For the Umis Olam, they don't have that. They don't have the Rabbeinu Shloilem. Their relationship to Rabbeinu Shloilem is always going to be a figment of their imagination. That's not a racist comment. That's just the reason why Yisrael can relate to Rabbeinu Shloilem is because we have a neshama. Nothing to do with us. Anything of reality, anything of creation that's relating to Rabbeinu Shloilem is turning him into some kind of, it might be a very elevated hagshama, but it's going to be some kind of elevated nivra.
As I explained, aleph versus
base. So now, if the Torah begins with an aleph, with a base, yeah, what's underneath that? What comes before the base is the aleph. The aleph is a lufa shel olam. The aleph is lamed is yud vav and a yud, which is 26. The aleph is silent. The aleph is echad. Yeah, the aleph is silent, but at the same time it can manifest every single sound. The aleph is Hashem. The aleph is Hashem. The aleph always represents Hashem. Yeah, base represents creation. So for us, for the yidden, the Torah is our gateway to the Rabbeinu Shloilem. It's not an end unto itself. It's a Pesach. Now that doesn't mean that when you're learning Torah, you're thinking about Hashem. That doesn't mean that at all. That means when you're learning Torah, your mamash learning Torah, trying to understand the Torah. Yeah, it's lishma. You're trying to understand the Torah for the sake of the Torah. But you're really the reason why you're trying to understand the Torah is because of the Rabbeinu Shloilem. And it's not like understanding the Rabbeinu Shloilem through the Torah means you understand a moshul and then you start thinking about God. Understanding that the mezuzah goes on the right door, understanding that on Leil Pesach, yeah, you have to eat matzah, and you have to eat a certain amount of matzah, and you have to be leaning on your left side, and you etc. etc. You have to eat it before chatzos, whatever you do, yeah. That is the Rabbeinu Shloilem. Not that now you're understanding how that means this in Elokus and that in Elokus. The actual understanding of the Pasha mission, the Pasha Pshat of the Gemara is the closest you get to Rabbeinu Shloilem. It's much closer than sitting there doing a meditation, feeling that you're bound up in Rabbeinu Shloilem, because that's just Hagoshas. The actual understanding of the Torah is the closest a human can get to Rabbeinu Shloilem. So when I'm saying that it's a means to Rabbeinu Shloilem, it doesn't mean that it's a way to help us think about Hashem. It's an end unto itself in that sense, but it's a kli chemda. So we're trying to get through the base to the aleph. That's anoichi. Ana, nafshi, kasavis, yavis. My soul I wrote. I wrote my soul into the Torah. That's anoichi. By the Umas Olam, it stops at Aleph. It's not a Kli Chemda to them, it's the Soif. That's the end for them. They even call it the Old Testament, because they came up with a new one. Even that one's out of date, according to them. So, the whole Inyan of Torah, going back to Manishtana, is the kids asking the question. And our voida at Manishtana is not thinking about how to educate the child, how to answer the child, etc. Our voida on Leil Seder, which is the genesis of our relationship with the Rabbeinu Shloilem, is learning why we're asking questions. Now, I want to get bothered if the child, you get some children ask questions, some people don't ask so much questions. The children ask questions, the ones who are attentive to the world, inquisitive. They take things more seriously, yeah? That's the avoider. That's our avoider, is to allow the Torah to become so real to us that we can't tolerate the fact that this doesn't make any sense. And we turn around to Rabbeinu Shloim, and we're like, Rabbeinu Shloim, this story of Nachum Ish Gamzu, it's, what are you telling me? Why are you saying this to me? You've told Chazal, you gave Ruach HaKodesh to Chazal 1500 years ago, 1600 years ago, to write this down forever. They knew that I was going to be reading this, yeah? This isn't a history book. They don't want to tell me that. What are you telling me, Rabbeinu Shloim? That's the same thing as your kid who's sitting next to you going, Abba, why is the sky blue? Abba, why do the trees keep making that noise when they shuffle? Abba, why is your car like this? Abba, why do I have to sit in the back? And they're just free real questions, yeah? That's the foundation, that's the pneumius of where the question's coming from. And you're saying to Rabbeinu Shloim, and then you should get, what's the word? You should get mamash like irritated, not in a gaivadika way, but more than irritated. It should become kind of obsessed, like in a healthy way. And you come home and you sit down with your wife and you say, listen, this is driving me crazy. There's this story in the Gemara, yeah, and explain it to her. And she probably won't be very interested, or she might be. And then you'll be talking to your friends about it, and you'll be thinking about it, and you'll be looking it up and researching it, and it will get, that is mamash kodesh kadoshim. That's kodesh. But not just. But you have to remember that is, you let it mamash bother you, and that will give you the energy to keep researching and to keep busting yourself and looking. But just remember the panemius of it. That's the beginning. If that's what we learn from the children. Is the reason why you're asking this is because you want something to ask him. You want him to, he's more desperate, this is a very big klal in reality, b'chlal, is he's much more desperate to reveal his Torah to us than we are to have it revealed to us. He created the whole world so he can give himself to us. So he's infinitely plotzing to do that. We, if we work really, really hard, yeah, we might kind of want it a bit, or maybe a lot. But his want is infinite to reveal himself to us. So by reading these stories, so that's why we're saying that whether these stories happened or didn't happen, yeah, that's not our concern. And if that they happen, and that's going to impact your tshuka of bikush, yeah, then it's probably better to assume that it didn't happen. You can assume both. But the ikkar is to be Doroshei Hashem, is to turn around and say, this doesn't make any sense, Bichlal. These stories of Rabbah Bar Bar Chana. Remember the beginning of Lakuta Maran? He goes to all the stories of Rabbah Bar Chana with these crazy, massive birds and the big frogs and, you know, like bigger than 10 cities and all kinds of crazy stuff, yeah? Everyone knows that's not Kapshutoi. And most, then you could get a couple of crazy people I've actually met who would say it's Kapshuto. Yeah. But most people, anyone with a brain in their mind, in their brain, in their skull, says it's not Kapshuto, yeah? So that you should be mamash. But in all of the stories of Chazal, it should be the same thing. And the point is, and that's going back to the pasuk, we'll finish with this from Yedid Nefesh. We said, Yarav lo yedidoi secha, that your yedidus will be sweeter to me, from any kind of honeycomb, the whole tam, and from any kind of taste, but tam also means reason. That's how you can read that. That your yedidus is worth more than me to all the tamim of everything. The only reason why I want the tamim, and I really do want the tamim, is only because of you. That's why I want the tamim. Like you see me looking through you, if I saw a steer, I'm going through like the baseball results, and I see, you know, on BBC it says it was like this, and on CNN it says it like this. Is that going to drive me nuts? Am I going to be talking to my wife about giving me the, help me be misyashev this? I don't understand. The BBC said it was, I don't know how it works in baseball, 10-1, I don't know. And CNN said it was 10-3, yeah? I don't care. I can care less. Why do I care about this stira, Lahavdo, this stira in the Gemara with Nachamish Gamzu? Because of Yedido Secha, because of your Didus. And that's the beginning of Yiddishkeit.
Because by the sports, one of them is correct. By the story of Nachamish Gamzu, that both of them are MS, but what's in the Kud of MS that runs through both of those stories?
That would be the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Yeah.
So when it comes to sports, one of them is right, one's wrong.
But no,
here, they're both correct.
But I'm saying different. I hear that. But I was saying different is that I don't even care why, which one's correct, because I'm not bothered by baseball.
A person.
Right, so what? But that guy who cares about baseball, he looks at the steerer between Rav and Abaya and he says, leave me alone, I don't care.
Right.
That's the difference between me and him, is that the Torah is a kli chemda. So the Torah is there for you to care about mamash. Just like Lahavdil, Elif Alpha Elafim Havdala, is that crazy guy with the baseball cards, cares about the steerer in the two results. Because he cares about baseball. I don't care about baseball, so I don't care about that. He doesn't care about the Rabbeinu Shlomo, so he doesn't care there's a steerer between Rav and Abaye. Whereas I care about the Rabbeinu Shlomo, and I know that the only way of getting to the Rabbeinu Shlomo is through these steerers, through these things that are apparently contradictory in the Torah. And that's the first lesson on Leil Seder. That's the first lesson on Leil Seder. Once the Seder begins, is the kid stands up and says, Manishtana. And you don't even answer him, like we said, you don't even answer him. Because he doesn't care about the answers. Especially the three-year-old, he can hardly speak the words, like he just doesn't care about the answers. He cares about his tati. Tati Zisa, that's what he says. Oh, there you go. There you go. Tati Zisa. There you go. That's exactly the point. He's looking for tati. He's not looking for the answers. We're looking for the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Yeah? We are going to become, the way to do it is to demand the answers, to not be able to sleep without having the answers. Yeah? Was about to share.
I was by my parents for the Seder. And my niece, my 13-year-old niece, hit the Afikomen, right? And so it's already late at night. Everybody wants to finish.
And she probably hit it really well as well. Yeah,
we're getting tired, right? And so there was this little dynamic that was playing out between my father and my niece, right? My father wants to have a coffee. And my niece doesn't know what to... She's like sitting there at the table. And they're like, "New Yali, what do you want?" You know, because, you know, he'll give her a present if she gives him the avocado. So she has to ask him what she wants for it. You know, and she's like thinking... In the end, she decided she wanted an iPad, right? And she said, "Okay, sure, I'll give you that." Nice. Right? So she's like sitting there, like, felling over it. And all of us were just like... Like, get it over with, like, kid, just tell, you know, like, and we all know, like, my dad will give her whatever she wants, right? He's this great kid in love, you know, like, he'd give her so much more than she could even think that she could get, right? Like, what, you know, whatever she wants, a grandfather will give his grandkid, right? So, and it made me think, it's like, Geula, right? Like, every generation before us, they're just waiting for Geula, right? But every generation that comes in is like, but I want an iPad first, you know. Like when we say in davening, right? Like kivinu, like we're like, do we really, really want Mashiach? But I didn't get the iPad yet. I didn't have the full experience, right? And Hashem's just like you said before, plotting. He just wants to give us the. He wants to give us everything, right? But we're sitting here felling over like, did I get everything yet? You know.
Yep.
Galus to every generation before us looks like our Galus now looks like paradise to any generation that came before us. So like we have to want, like we have, yeah, it's funny. And what we imagine maybe the next generation will have in Galus, you know, God forbid, it's still going up.
Very nice.